and we'll lead them on Saturday. We'll try and beat Everton, and then we'll take the draw, and then we'll try and win the fucking Champions League.
Graham Potter, he has been sacked by Chelsea.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to you all to the Fixture Congestion Podcast, the nasal decongestive spray for all busy football fans. Speaking of busy football fans, because we're in a rat race, today the podcast will be a two-parter, with each guest having one part. We're going to start off with the managerial carousel at Chelsea, move on to Bayern, go around some dream cars we would all like to drive, and see why managers can also evolve like Pokemon. We start off with Sam Tabuteau, and I would like you, the listener, to pick the best introduction for him. I would have gone with Sam Tabuteau, the Chelsea hunk of football journalism, whilst he picked freelance journalist and Chelsea fan, Sam Tabuteau. Hello, Sam.
You're all right, mate.
Okay. What lazy pundits would have called a momentous weekend in the Prem, I would also call a momentous weekend in the Prem, since I'm lazy. And I would like to begin with a top four race. Sam, two big April Fool jokes. Liverpool goading us with their first goal before conceding four from Manchester City, and Chelsea losing 2-0 to Aston Villa. Can you give me an honest rating of Liverpool and Chelsea's chances of playing Champions League football next season?
I mean, I think when it comes to Chelsea, that's almost non-existent at this point. There's too many teams in between us and the top four, and, you know, ultimately, I just think we're going to be sitting around 10th and 11th. But in terms of Liverpool, I mean, I had them down to actually make the top four. But given Newcastle's recent upsurge and, you know, Tottenham basically moving on from Conte, there's a likelihood that they're going to pick up some form. And to be honest with you, I'd fancy Newcastle and United to take the top, the third and fourth position. So for Liverpool, yeah, I think it's, you know, time to sort of look ahead to next season. They've got a big squad overhaul that they need to get through. And yeah, I think in terms of top four, that's probably out of the question.
You say zero chances, but I can distinctly remember watching another disaster class car crash Chelsea season where you won the Champions League.
9 years after the first one, the famous old trophy is heading back to West London. Blue is the colour in Porto tonight. And Chelsea...
That is very true. Chelsea have that in the locker. And I think that's what... keeps Chelsea fans always in the loop. We're never out of anything. And yeah, I mean, you know, if you get the managerial appointment correct and you start building something, then once you get into the latter stages of the Champions League, anything can happen. These are one-off knockout games, and I think that's where Chelsea squads tend to excel, really. You know, they never put together these strong runs of form that you see your Liverpools and your Cities going for, but they are a great sort of knockout team, and I don't think that's changed. So yeah, definitely in and thereabouts, but yeah, we'll have to see with the managerial appointment.
Well, they're lined up against another famous knockout team who can produce results even though they're having a bad season, Real Madrid. And they seemed last season to sort of stumble their way towards the final, a final where Liverpool pressed them heavily, and yet they came out 1-0 winners. I think these two teams are pretty similar, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on the upcoming semi-final. What do you think of your chances?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, this is a repeat of the two legs from last season, and ultimately... you wouldn't have given Chelsea much chance given their first leg. And yet they went to the Bernabeu and they were within minutes of causing a massive upset there. So I think, as you say, both the teams are very similar in terms of the way they approach the Champions League. They have that pedigree. They have that ability to pull out a performance when you wouldn't necessarily expect it. That said, though, I do believe, you know, Real Madrid are the kings of Europe for good reason. And as much as Chelsea, I'd argue they probably have an advantage in having the home leg second. Personally, I can't see them making too much headway. I think Real Madrid, you know, with Vinicius and Benzema and players like that, they just have those moments of quality. I think Chelsea might build towards, but at the moment, your Enzo Fernandez's, your Mudrics are not quite ready yet to be performing at that sort of level.
Right, and you touched upon the newest managerial appointment. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, I'd like you and me to take a quick trip up north, where Newcastle have beaten United 2-0.
Johnson by Wilson. It's two. The game is over for Newcastle United. They've won it 2-0, surely.
I know you are currently writing an article on Kieran Trippier, so I'm guessing you've watched some Newcastle. Who's going to finish third? Because right now they're level on points, with Newcastle having a better goal difference, plus 22 to plus 4.
It's an interesting one. I think, you know, if you'd asked me this question, say, 2-3 weeks ago, especially after that League Cup final, I would have said Man United without a shadow of a doubt. But, you know, Newcastle have this newfound mentality, which is going to prove really useful for them, where they never seem down and out, and they seem to be able to revitalise themselves. You know, from the first sort of half of the season before the World Cup, they were a team that prioritised defensive stability, clean sheets, and they were just a tough team to beat. Then after the World Cup, they sort of, you know, they struggled maybe with the weight of expectation. But now with Isaac returning, Callum Wilson also hitting a bit of form, same with Joe Willock. These players have suddenly found a bit of a new lease of life. And with 10 games to go, that's exactly what you need. You know, they're building ahead of steam, whilst Man United, due to injuries and suspensions, you know, them not having Casemiro, not having Eriksen, are playing a huge role in
their performance. I think it's important for me that we haven't changed our approach too much.
Based on form, then Newcastle look like the team who are going to take that first spot.
Losing your identity for certain games. So we've tried to be very consistent. We've tried to show the best of ourselves in those games.
I know Newcastle have got quite a few tricky games to come. And I would also argue that, as much as you might not say it now, Chelsea away on the final day of the season that's a difficult place to go. And I think that, you know, it's going to remain tight right up until the end. So they've got a tough run, I'd say, Newcastle.
You know, as you mentioned, tough runs. United haven't exactly got it easy. And the season is already taking a toll on the squad. And they have two more competitions. If you were Erik ten Hag right now, would you sacrifice third and throw the kitchen sink at the Europa League and the FA Cup in hopes of winning at least one?
I think you would, honestly, because, you know, the distinction between third and fourth has never been that big. And no one's going to give you credit for finishing third rather than fourth if that means that you're not going to win an FA Cup or a Europa League. I mean, ultimately, if they end the season with, you know, a so-called treble, then that is arguably one of the most successful seasons they've had in over a decade. So, yeah, I think he probably will look at that position and think to himself, fourth, it's by no means secured, but they do have...
They have one game.
I think they have the edge over Tottenham.
Against Tottenham.
Sorry?
They have one game in hand against Tottenham.
Yeah, so I think they have the edge both in terms of a squad and in terms of their ability to turn out big performances when the going gets tough. They've shown a bit more steel resilience this season. So I think that for me, top four, it's not confirmed, but it's certainly safe right now. And I think that priorities probably should switch towards winning a Europa League title that's definitely in their hands, especially now that Arsenal are out. And again, with an FA Cup where anything could happen. We're at the semi-final stage. You're two games away from potentially a historic season.
The last one being City. Mm. But they have their own problems, Champions League and a push for the title. Do you see United repeating their performance against City in an FA Cup final, if they reach that, of course?
I mean, it's a tough one to say, but I think, you know, it won't be one side, it would be a very even game. And I think United tend to have that edge over City, or at least they have in recent years. And again, it's a cup final. Anything sort of goes, right? So you definitely can't discount a side like City, like United, sorry. And given that they've already been to Wembley and won, there's no reason to suggest that they wouldn't, I don't think.
And maybe Guardiola will overthink it again.
Potentially, yeah.
As he usually does. Looking at the chasing pack, we have three teams, besides, of course, Liverpool and Chelsea, who some people might still believe could play European football next season. We have Tottenham, who surprisingly are still clinging on, despite all of their issues. They're 1 point away from United and Newcastle, but they have one game in hand. Now, the other two ones are Brighton and Brentford, the two Moneyball teams, with two games in hand on Tottenham. Could I ask a very big task of you to say who's going to be playing European football next season and in which competitions?
Okay. So, for me, I think the only position changes I can actually see personally will be Tottenham and Brighton. I think obviously Brighton have got two games in hand. I also think they are building a lot of momentum, and they have been all season, and they're headed in the right direction, whereas Spurs, through Kane's involvement, have managed to stick around despite not playing well for large portions of the season. But yeah, I can see Brighton making good on their two games in hand and switching positions with Tottenham. So that would make it Brighton in Europa League, with United fourth. Yeah, with United third, Newcastle fourth, Brighton fifth, and then Tottenham sixth. I'm not sure Brentford get there and thereabouts, because I don't think that the strength of their squad is quite there compared to the other two teams. And I also think that they've got a lot of players running hot at the minute, and I don't see that continuing for the rest of the season.
In this area of 5th to 10th, let's say, or 11th to include Chelsea, there wasn't a dig, just to be sure. We potentially have a lot of managerial changes which will influence the future of these teams. Because, once again, like, insanely, Brighton's manager is linked to Chelsea, same as with Brentford's, and they both could get linked to Tottenham plausibly. I would like you to play a little game with me. I'm getting on my tricycle and I'm putting on my mask. And we're going to have a little game on Chelsea's managerial hunt. So at the moment, the meme creators out there will probably be insinuating that Todd Bowley saw the Arsenal hiring of Mikel Arteta and thought, oh, a project manager. I'm going to get me one of those. And then hired Potter. And now he saw Bayern firing its manager, Julian Nagelsmann, because someone else, Thomas Tuchel, was available on the market and all the other clubs were circling. All jokes aside, Nagelsmann is currently linked with Chelsea, with Tottenham, and with Real Madrid. Sorry about that. So what I would like you to do is I'm going to name managers and we're going to do a little word association, like one of those psychology tests.
Okay.
Okay, so it's just going to be quick fire, just one word per manager. Julian Nagelsmann.
Chelsea.
Thomas Frank.
Stays at Brentford, so Brentford.
Oliver Glasner.
Not ready.
Jose Enrique.
Nah, out of the question.
Zinedine Zidane.
I don't, PSG, he wants the PSG job.
Adi Hütter.
Yeah, not in contention.
Poch.
Too many Spurs links.
Brendan Rodgers.
Spurs.
And Simeone.
Atletico.
Okay. With this out of the way, you're obviously leaning towards Nagelsmann. Mm. What I would like to put forward is Chelsea are now in a situation where they started the project. They've abandoned it mid-season. They are scrambling for a new manager because their targets have other links as well. What I would like to propose as an outside shout in, let's say, a parallel universe is Sean Dyche, because he is the sort of manager who can work with little to no transfers, because as far as I see it, you've already locked in your destiny on this group of players. There's been a huge outlay. FFP is already looking to get involved and changing the rules regarding these 8 to 10 year contracts. I don't know what it is. There's crazy figures touted in the media. Would someone like that work better than, let's say, someone like Nagelsmann, who would expect signings, who would expect change?
It's an interesting shout, but I don't necessarily think that that would work, just purely for the sake that Dyche, a little like Potter, it's about big game sort of mentalities and surrounding yourself in those sort of environments. Say, you know, I'm not even stipulating that you should come anywhere near Chelsea, but a character like Ancelotti is someone who's built his name on being able to handle these big characters and, you know, get the best out of them. He might not be as tactically astute or as tactically renowned as someone like Potter, but ultimately he knows how to come into a big club, a high-pressure environment with players on big wages who demand a lot, and he knows how to relate to them and how to get the best out of them. I think Dyche would probably struggle with that sort of stuff. He is a manager who's operated towards the lower end of the Premier League table, and he's someone who gets the best out of these individuals. But I think, as Potter's sort of shown, they're not necessarily transferable skills. And so, yeah, sometimes there is a bit of a glass ceiling for these managers. We might want them to really fulfill this potential that we've given them, but sometimes it's, you know, they're two different worlds, managing teams of Chelsea's caliber to managing teams, say, of a Brighton, who, as much as they are pushing for European football and they're onto a really good thing with De Zerbi, they are a team who relishes the idea that they're a balls to the wall underdog story who are performing above their station. Chelsea don't operate like that. Chelsea, for good or for worse, they have a reputation. The fans are very keen for them to stick with that reputation. And ultimately, their manager needs to come in and basically relish that culture. And I don't think someone like Dyche, much like Potter, would be able to do that.
Okay, but what I would like to bring to the table is that, yes, there is a glass ceiling and Potter might break through it one day, but I think people forget what kind of mess he inherited. He came into a club who just fired the manager who took them to the Champions League, lost key players over the summer. The club was already in flux and in a tumultuous situation because not only did Roman Abramovich leave, people like Marina Granovskaya also left. And I think people don't notice how important she and her backroom staff were, especially in transfer negotiations.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the thing with Potter is, as much as it might not sound like it, I was personally a big advocate of his. And I felt that, as much as I couldn't tell you whether he was going to be the right or the wrong man, there's no way that anyone could categorically tell me that after 7 months they knew full well whether he was correct or not for the club. You know, with these things, if you're looking at a project manager, you can't be giving him no pre-season, a bloated squad, and only 7 months to prove that he can turn around what is a club in, not turmoil, but a club that's really looking to shake off the shackles of a 20-year relationship, being Abramovich, right? Entering a new era under Boehly. And I think that's the problem when it comes to thinking about who's next and who is right for Chelsea post-Potter, is that I could give you any name under the sun and I think that they'd probably be a good fit. Nagelsmann's probably a good fit, but if you're only going to give him 7 months, if you're only going to give him, you know, the end of this season, a pre-season, and then say another 4 months to prove that he's the right man for the job, then you're not going to get the answer you desire. And so, yeah, I feel sorry for Potter. You know, I couldn't tell you whether he was the right or wrong man for the job, but ultimately, you were never going to know that answer within 7 months.
So going forward, what I'd like to put to you is, you know, these images on the internet with players morphed together out of different parts. You know, Ronaldo's heading, Messi's dribbling, Iniesta's brain, stuff like that. I would like to ask you to name a manager from the parts that I sort of come up with. Because as I see it right now, Chelsea have a huge squad. I think it's something like 30 plus players signed on.
Mm-hmm.
They've spent a huge amount of money. That means they have to sell before they can bring in. So you need someone like someone with, let's say, Harry Redknapp's wheeling and dealing skills. You need someone tactically astute to face the big games that are coming up. For example, the Champions League semi-final. You need someone with Sean Dyche's firefighting skills to gel this desperate group of people together really quickly in the really short time we have left in this season. And we need someone with Ancelotti's man management skills, and someone, let's say, like Zidane, who can come into a dressing room full of 100 million plus players and say, I'm Zinedine Zidane, you listen to me. Who would be the best all-rounder?
The best all-rounder for me, well, that is a tough one. I think you have a very distinct lack of options on the market, which is why, you know, I'm not fully taken by Nagelsmann, because I think he's a very good manager and he's proven that. But ultimately, at 35 years old, his problem at Bayern became that he wasn't commanding enough respect, because you had senior players in there who felt that they've done more in the game, that argue they were probably, you know, players like Neuer, for example, they're older than Nagelsmann. And obviously when Nagelsmann makes a big decision on sacking Neuer's goalkeeping coach, then suddenly you're looking at a man who's younger than you, has not won anywhere near as much as you, and then suddenly you get friction, right? So Nagelsmann's by no means the finished product, but he probably is the best manager available on the market right now. I think he offers fairly high level experience. Obviously, he's been in the Champions League with Bayern Munich, and by all accounts, they were for me my favourites, even before Nagelsmann's sacking. So he's navigated ties with PSG. He has that experience of winning, maybe not too much, but he does have experience of managing top players. I just think that maybe that inexperience is going to prove a stumbling block. There's quite a few reports that Boehly, whilst he's taken by Nagelsmann and he appreciates his quality, he is also a little bit apprehensive about the age, because he's, you know, he took a risk on Potter. He took a risk on an inexperienced man, an idealist who plays a certain way, and has a very bright future in the game. And he sort of came unstuck, right? And Nagelsmann offers a little bit of a similar conundrum. So I'm sure they're wary of those sort of issues. But as I say, the options on the market currently are fairly limited. And I think Nagelsmann is a cut above everybody available currently.
So I would like to counter that. What you've said is perfectly understandable. Everyone would have those apprehensions towards Julian Nagelsmann. I hear that Real Madrid are also in for him. And let's say at the end of the season, Ancelotti has this, what they call a mutual exit. They bring in Nagelsmann, and suddenly Ancelotti is free under market. with the Brazil job lined up, for which he's touted for, should Chelsea go in and entice him with basically the world, promise him whatever he wants, money, eyebrow treatments, everything?
It's an interesting one. I think when it comes to Ancelotti, I'm not a big fan of going back over old ground with managers. I've seen, you know, Mourinho and Conte touted, and I'd err on the side of caution with those two. So I think the same sort of stands for Ancelotti. I appreciate what he did for the club, and his man management skills are, you know, they're a cut above. So he certainly offers a lot of answers. But again, I think if you're looking to build a project, and we've got this 2030 master plan that's been talked about, and that's where the end goal is, etc. We've got players on these long contracts. I'm not trying to hang my hat on a manager who values, you know, he won't be around the game for too much longer, right? Age does have to come into it, and I don't think that he's a manager where you look at him and say 5-10 years down the line, he'll still be there. So I think realistically, if he's to leave Real Madrid, Brazil is probably the perfect send-off for him, because he gets the 26 World Cup, he gets an unbelievable squad of players who will appreciate his man management skills, and man management skills go a lot further in international football as well, and I think that's a very good fit for him. So I don't think that Chelsea should be looking towards him, and I don't think that Ancelotti will be looking towards the project at Chelsea and thinking that that's something that he wants to get involved with.
So you're a firm believer in this new way of Chelsea doing things, with a long-term manager instead of a rotating cast of superstars who come in, win 2 or 3 trophies and then leave?
100%. The project has always been at the forefront of everything that the owners have spoken about, and I think a lot of fans, especially match-going fans, would appreciate a change in approach from the club, because we've always been a club that's valued short-term success, and we've found it. But you know, going forward, if you're going to build title-winning squads and squads that compete for trophies every season, then you need to be looking further than 18 months to 2 years down the line. And I think Liverpool and Manchester City are a testament to that.
What you want right now is a boring third place finish with some exciting youngsters for next season.
For sure. I mean, I think this season it's done and dusted. The Champions League is obviously a very nice bonus, and no doubt they'll be wanting to compete for that. But when we're talking about the season as a whole, we need to be looking towards building something for next year and the year after that. And with such a massive squad, this project that we talk about doesn't really get started until the summer, because you have to trim down that squad.
Sam, before I let you go, two quick questions, one footballing and one non-footballing, and we'll start with possibly a painful one for you. Who'll win the title?
Who'll win the title? Oh, God. Whilst I really hope it's Manchester City, I can't see anything beyond Arsenal. They've got a sense of inevitability about them at the moment, and that's it's a real shame for me to say, but yeah, I see them winning the title at this stage.
Inevitability, I think it's a really good word. On to the personal question, what car do you drive, and what car would you like to drive?
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I don't even drive, actually. I've got a provisional license, but I think if I did have a license, I'd love to drive a Porsche. Love to drive a Porsche. Nice Porsche 911.
Okay, and you're not a driver because you live in London, right?
Exactly, yeah. I'm always on the buses and the trains.
Okay. Thank you very much for being on this podcast. I hope that Chelsea fans can learn from you, because you are, I think, one of the most level-headed Chelsea fans out there who can look beyond the sort of entitlement that demands a trophy every season. Please tell the ladies and gentlemen listening to us where they can find you and what you're working on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on. So I work for Breaking the Lines. So I do a lot of pieces for them, and I have an article coming out on Kieran Trippier in a few days. I also work for Norwich and Scunthorpe doing their match day programmes, and you can catch me on Arsenal Fan TV Media, which as a Chelsea fan seems a bit strange, but you take the work you can get.
Thank you very much, Sam. Stay tuned. We're going to take a little break and then we'll be back with some Bundesliga action for you guys. And we're back to tackle the Germans, the very ones who are having a title fight after so many years of Bayern dominance. With me, I have Augustus, who despite his name is not a Roman emperor, but he is a Bayern fan. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. Very happy to be with you tonight, guys.
Okay, so of course we're going to start with the big one, Wolfsburg drawing Augsburg. Not really. It's Bayern 4, Dortmund 2.
A baptism of fire for Bayern's new head coach, Thomas Tuchel, as he took on former team Dortmund, who travelled to Munich intent on defending their status as league leaders in Der Klassiker.
Did you see this coming? Because honestly, I didn't. I thought Dortmund would beat them.
Honestly, I was a little bit more nervous than I usually is when we face Dortmund, especially at the Allianz Arena. But I had a feeling that we would win. You know, just listening to the players, a few interviews before the game, you had the feeling that they really wanted to fix things. They really wanted to send a strong image. And honestly, throughout the season, whenever we needed to be strong, whenever we needed to win, we were there, we won. And I think this was no different. Now, I hope that continues into the next few games. So Freiburg first and then Manchester City. But yeah, I think I had a feeling that we would win. I was overall confident, not as confident as usual, because this Dortmund was quite good. And yeah, I think they had a few arguments to, or a few reasons to come to the Allianz Arena and really like try to take that title. Finally, it was only 90 minutes in the end and they could have done it. But yeah, I think overall we did a great job and we won.
One of the reasons Dortmund should have felt entitled to win, we can say, is Bayern sacking Nagelsmann midway through a season, something they don't do very often. And I think we saw this knee-jerk reaction at Chelsea with the man who replaced Nagelsmann, Thomas Tuchel. And in the end, it proved to be a mistake. Do you think that this sudden switch will come back to bite Bayern in the ass?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I've been thinking about the Chelsea Tuchel episode, and I really think that what happened was that they wanted to invest. There was a new board, a new owner, and he didn't want, I think, to continue whatever Abramovich was working on, and that was also Thomas Tuchel. So investing or backing Thomas Tuchel in the winter market meant also that whatever, I think, outcome was going to affect also the image the new owner would have. So I think that he wanted to have all the success for himself, all the glory for himself, and keeping Thomas Tuchel was just not an option. At Bayern, I felt like it was a little bit different. So it was clear, there were clear indications that Bayern, whenever the second part of the season arrives, we're not as dominant, we're not as good as we usually are. So this season, I think the World Cup played a huge role. I think it was very unfair towards Nagelsmann the second, because, yeah, as I've said, whenever we needed to win, we won. There were obviously a few games where we were not good, we were not up to our level, but you cannot only blame that on the coach. Now, I feel like it was more than just the results as well. I feel like there was also a certain sense of fear when facing Pep. I think that Bayern felt that Thomas Tuchel just had a bigger chance of beating Pep Guardiola than Nagelsmann, because, yeah, I mean, I think they thought he was still inexperienced, still not that great manager to be able to really beat Guardiola in a Champions League tie. Tuchel did it, proved it. And yeah, I think there was also a fear of missing out on him in case Nagelsmann ends the season as last season, and then we would be forced to fire him or to change coaches, and Thomas Tuchel would not be available. So I think it's a little bit of all of this. It's a very different scenario for me than what happened with Chelsea, because I feel like it was even more unfair to Tuchel what happened at Chelsea. If Nagelsmann won the Champions League last season, I think there was no way anyone would fire him. And yeah, Thomas Tuchel did win the Champions League with Chelsea. So I think from my side, yeah, it's still unfair, but I think there were a few good reasons for the board to make this decision. Now they have to stick with it and see how the season ends, because if it ends badly, it will be really, really bad for all of us, for Nagelsmann, for the actual coach, for the board, for the fans. And I think that it would have been maybe just simpler to let things go the way they were going.
Tuchel obviously has advantages over Nagelsmann. He's a bit older, a bit more experienced, but at the same time, from what I've read and from what I've heard, he is a bit more abrasive. He had his run-ins with Pauli at Chelsea, and he also had those run-ins with the PSG board. How can people like Oliver Kahn and Hasan Salihamidžić deal with him? And could we maybe see another explosion? Because as we all well know, Oliver Kahn isn't the calmest person in the world.
Yeah, I think he will never be the calmest person in the world. I mean, his career was good proof. Yeah, I really believe that Thomas Tuchel is not always the problem as well in all of this issues that he had with different sporting directors or like technical directors or presidents, etc. I think that there was good reasons behind it. I mean, if we look at the PSG history with Leonardo, I think, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I mean, he sold Thiago Silva, didn't want to renew Cavani. I mean, a lot of players were gone. I don't think Tuchel was happy with that. At Chelsea, yeah, I think it was a new owner. As I said, I really believe that he wanted to build a project with a coach that he brought so that he gets all the glory. He took a gamble on Potter, he didn't pay. But I really understand the idea behind it. At Dortmund, maybe. At Dortmund, I think it was a little bit him, a little bit their board as well. It was a problem that could have been avoided. But one thing that it's been very clear throughout the years at Bayern is that it's the board that matters. So if you go against the board, you will have issues staying at Bayern. There is very few coaches, I think, that manage to even upset or create problems with the board. And usually those who have a great connection have all the trust from the people above. They usually stay. I think the last coach that we really wanted to extend was Pep Guardiola. And Pep Guardiola, we all know that he was or he had a great relationship with Rummenigge, with Uli Hoeneß. And yeah, I think that it's a good sign overall. If you have a great relationship with the board, then you will stay at Bayern. I think Tuchel is trying to do his best. He had, I think, a dinner with Uli Hoeneß. He tried to talk with Salihamidžić. He's really trying to build that relationship. I'm not sure he wants to stay for a super long term, but I think I think the idea would be to keep him for at least 2 years and see how that goes. I don't think we plan to build another 5 years project with another coach, basically.
So apart from this 4-2 win against Dortmund, Bayern haven't felt like their old self this season. I personally remember them, especially in 2013 with Jupp Heynckes, and yeah, then later with Hansi Flick. Those sides, when you looked at the lineup before the game, you knew how they were going to play, and you knew that they're going to win. You didn't have fear as a Bayern fan. But this season, it's been different. Bayern have been shaky. And we know that Nagelsmann was brought in because of his playing philosophy, which is pretty similar to Tuchel's. They're basically cut from the same cloth. But at the same time, I feel like Tuchel is a bit more pragmatic because he's traveled a bit more. He's experienced a bit more. Can this be put really simply as Tuchel being the Pokemon evolution of Nagelsmann?
That's a really good way to put it. I think, honestly, the issue with Nagelsmann is is first, there was a lot of bad performances that you cannot just, you know, forget about. There was the Gladbach in the Pokal, I think 5-0. There was the Villarreal tie last season in the Champions League. This season we were really good in the Champions League, but then you look at the Bundesliga and we had a lot of games where we could have easily won, or we were dominating the game and then we conceded an equalizer at the last minute. And I think all of that played a role. We really had certain issues against teams that would press us very high. I think the last one was versus Leverkusen, and he showed how limited we were. And I really think that he was not that pragmatic. And that also is a good point, because I feel like Tuchel is pragmatic. Like, his Chelsea and his PSG are very different sides for me. And yeah, I think Nagelsmann was a little bit forcing his back three when we didn't have the squad for that. So it showed limits. Also, we were not as good as we should be as keeping possession, at really building from the back. And that would show against teams that put presses very high with a lot of players and would really create problems for us. So we conceded a lot of goals, more than we should, against teams that should not be able to score against us. And that happened as well against Dortmund. So I think Tuchel will still have a lot of work to do. We have a few issues that are very obvious. For example, once we lose our number nine, which is Choupo-Moting, it's not maybe the flashiest number nine out there, but just losing him, just having him on the bench, or just like substituting him, would create a lot of problems. We'd struggle to keep our shape. We struggle to get the ball out of the back and basically play simple. And everything becomes very complicated. So I think that after 1 year and a half, and with the squad we have, Nagelsmann had to bring the answers to this. There were not maybe enough answers, because in the big games we really always found solutions. So it's a little bit of a tricky situation, I think. So Tuchel is obviously the answer to that. I think when he met with the board, what has been said is that he impressed them. And I really believe, if you look at the first game versus Dortmund, he was really focusing on the fact that we need to keep possession as long as we can, and not just lose it, trying to transition to attacking positions very fast, because under Nagelsmann, that was really the goal, is that we have to transition as fast as possible. That meant obviously losing the ball in very dangerous situations. That obviously meant against teams that can press us very high, that they will have more goal scoring opportunities than they should. I think by taking a different approach, already Tuchel is already maybe finding solutions to those games against teams that should not be able to beat Bayern, and in all modesty or respect, Bayern has expectations, and I think that the board also had expectations. So there were certain games that we had to win, and I think that Tuchel is here exactly for that. It's not here just because we need to win all the big games. I think the team was doing very well on that aspect already, but he's here to really develop that identity in a way, exactly what you said, you know, that clear philosophy once we are on the pitch, and that we're not trying to force a back three when we don't have the squad for it, or just because we need to transition always very fast. But simply, I even think Nagelsmann had a clear identity, but it's, I think simply that we need to be more powerful, more present in each game, and not just like choose our games, if I can say so.
Back to this game, Dortmund obviously weren't that bad. They put up 1.7 expected goals to Bayern's 2.34. So Bayern overperforming there a little bit. Is there any chance left for Dortmund in the title? They're just 2 points away. And yep. As a follow-up question, it's a bit of a managerial merry-go-round right now. Could Dortmund target Nagelsmann and provide him with a platform for revenge, basically, especially given the fact that next transfer season, they will have a huge windfall from Jude Bellingham, who's very likely to move away. Some targets are almost confirmed. I hear that Kamada from Frankfurt is heavily linked, and yeah, Ben Sebaini of Gladbach is basically almost confirmed. I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I really don't see him going to Dortmund because, first of all, his salary, I think, is still very huge. I think he also is a coach that feels ready to take an experience abroad. He needs it as well. I think it's really good for any coach to go abroad to really test your ideas against different teams. What happened, for example, versus Villarreal would not happen to a coach, I think, that had coached in La Liga or coached more often in the Champions League. So I think that would be his next step, definitely, or 90%. It will be the Premier League in terms of salary, in terms of his expectations. I think that's where he would go, unless Real Madrid decides somehow that he is the coach they want. I think he's a great coach. I think he has a lot to learn. I think he has, it's an amazing coach. I just don't think Dortmund can afford him in terms of salary, and I don't think he is the man for them either. I feel like they are happy with Terzic. He did very well, and I don't see them doing the same scenario as last year with Marco Rose. So yeah, I think that Terzic would stay. I think it's his team. I think he has a really good relationship with the sporting director, with the board, and they will try to build that team together. It's also fair to give him a second opportunity after this season. He has been quite a tough competitor to beat. They managed to get 1 point versus Bayern in the first leg. The second part of the season, they were very good. I think not good enough to qualify in the Champions League, not good enough to beat Bayern, maybe not good enough to win the title, but they're not very far behind. They're more consistent in certain games, and they don't have the Champions League. So I don't think they lost all hope in the title. I think they are definitely going to be winning most of their I think, 8 or 7 games left. So yeah, I think that they will be there. I think they will finish at least second, obviously, and I don't think they will finish far behind Bayern. I don't see a big gap as we are maybe used to. I think this season they did very well, and Terzic deserves to continue his work and his development with this team. As for Bayern, I think that right now we sent a clear message. We need to win the title, but we still have the Pokal, we still have the Champions League, and even if we have the squad for competing in all these competitions, for example, one injury can still affect us. Now, to go back, I think, to your first question, it was more about how Bayern played against Dortmund, if I remember correctly.
It's Dortmund weren't that bad in this game.
Yeah.
And that led me to say maybe there's still hope for them this season, with Bayern possibly slipping up because they still have the Champions League and Tuchel is still new to the squad.
Yeah, I really don't think they were that bad. I think we were lucky with the first goal, obviously. It was a big mistake. And yeah, we took advantage of that. After that, I think that we were just more confident. We just knew we can win, and we just kept going. I feel like we played really well. I still think that if Bayern didn't make certain substitutions, and that's, again, the issue, is that whenever we lose one or two players, usually Coman or, for example, Choupo-Moting, we lose our shape. We lose our ability to really keep the ball, keep possession, to link, to get the ball out of like tight situations. And we tend to lose it more often. We tend to concede more counterattacks, etc. And that's exactly what happened after, I think, Gnabry gave away the penalty. And after that, I knew they would score more because we just struggle in certain situations. Now, I think if we were not 4 goals nil at that point, we would not have made those substitutions. So I still think Bayern was going to win anyway. Dortmund were not that bad, but not good enough to beat Bayern.
But in the end, it couldn't prevent Bayern, the German record title holders, from making a statement in Thomas Tuchel's first game in charge. It might be tight at the top with 8 games to play, but this is still Bayern's title to lose.
Now, as a sort of roundup of the whole league, the Bundesliga this year has been really crazy. I mean, up until now, Bayern used to run away with it. Maybe they were surprised in the cup so someone else would win it, like Wolfsburg, they did under Niko Kovac. And there usually was one or two teams who were at the bottom of the table throughout the whole season. But now we actually have a title fight, and in the relegation spots, we have teams going up and down all the time. Schalke looked like they were going nowhere, and suddenly they're second to last, but they could go to the playoffs. Now, do you think the Bundesliga can ever reach the level of the Premier League in spite of this 50+1 rule, which is sort of holding them back, but at the same time giving them that sort of extra flavor as the league of the fans?
Yeah, well, I really think if Bayern did it, then others can do it. I think I wrote a thread not so long ago about, for example, Hertha Berlin, who for me is a mystery. You know, you look at the amount of money they spent each summer, the investments they made, the money they have, and you know, they're 17th, I think, or yeah, 16th in the table this season. So I think it's not only the money, even if a lot of people try to make it all about the money. It is indeed important in order to keep the star players, because you have to offer them better salaries. But when you look, for example, at Dortmund, I feel like they have the funds to do that. They just never been doing it, or they didn't try until now. I think they're really trying to keep Jude Bellingham, offering him maybe 15 million per year contract. I think that the Bundesliga can compete with any league, because basically what we offer, or what the league offers, is something special. I think there is definitely that great fan culture, great league for upcoming talents, which was not maybe the case when I started watching the Bundesliga. It was full of players who were quite old. But right now, you know, it's very alive, like great league for coaches. A lot of coaches would love to coach in the Bundesliga. I just think that we need more proper project. When I look at Frankfurt, for example, that's a proper project. You know, they really tried to develop. When I look at Union Berlin, that's a proper project. So in terms of financing, in terms of having the ability to keep up with the Premier League, I think that it will be very hard to reach that point. I think that, for example, the Premier League will continue to develop, will continue to attract more money, especially because you can sell clubs to owners, and owners are always very interested in buying clubs there, because financially it just means a lot of financial revenue, a lot of like, it's just a great investment if you have a few millions or a few billions to spare. But the Bundesliga have something that is very special to it, something that's very it's not out there. I never seen it elsewhere. I watch a lot of other leagues. I really think that if the clubs keep investing the proper way, we will see clubs like Dortmund reaching the same level as, for example, Atleti these past few years, being able to win the league, being able to win Europa Leagues, being able to compete in the Champions League, maybe reach a final or two. But sadly, since 2013, for example, Dortmund took the wrong way on many levels. They made a lot of mistakes. I feel like right now, maybe they are changing. Right now, they're making or taking a different approach, and more similar to Bayern approach, where, for example, they're signing players that wants to stay, not just use them as a stepping stone. So we see players that come and stay. I hope that, for example, Kobel stays. I hope that, for example, Bellingham stays a little bit longer, because I feel like they can build a squad. But when you see them signing players like Haller, even throughout what happened to him, sadly, this season, he was for me a signing that proved that they were not just signing youngsters anymore, but they were signing players that can help them compete with Bayern, can help them win titles. He was that type of player that really did great last season with Ajax in the Champions League, in the league. And I felt like those type of signings are what Dortmund needs more than signing youngsters. I feel like at this point, the league needs, for example, more Union Berlins than Dortmund. You know, we need teams that will sign players that will improve them instantly. I look at Union Berlin, I look at what they did the past winter. They signed two players out of nowhere that did amazingly well in the World Cup, and that already have a big impact on the team so far. And I think that they would not have been top four at this point if they didn't make those two signings. So I really feel like we need more clubs that just show more ambition. For example, Wolfsburg have money. There are a lot of clubs in the Bundesliga that have enough funds to really compete. And I look at Villarreal, for example. They're not that rich. They don't have that fan base. They don't have that revenue. And, you know, they managed to beat Bayern. We need more of those stories in the Bundesliga. That's, I think, what we're missing today. When I look at Dortmund versus Chelsea, should be Dortmund qualifying. Like, Villarreal managed to upset Bayern. And I think that we're missing that. The fact that we have only Leverkusen and Bayern left in both European competitions is very sad. I think that we need to... I don't think we need to change a lot other than maybe that winning culture. We need more teams that have it other than Bayern, because so far at times it feels like there's only Bayern that cares about winning and only winning.
It's truly a great rundown that you've given us of the Bundesliga, and I really hope that maybe one day we'll see Union Berlin in a Champions League semi-final, because they are a club that feel like there's no glass ceiling to them. One last question before you leave. Two last questions. Will Bayern win the title?
Well, it's really a tough question. Right now, I think yes. I think that Bayern, you know, you wrote this. I looked at your Twitter and you wrote this, and it really made me laugh. And I think it's super on point. So before this podcast, I just checked your profile, and you wrote, if I remember correctly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that Bayern is like a football. If you push it down the water, it comes back more aggressively. Or the more you push it down the water, it comes back more aggressively, or something like that, no?
Yes, because when they're down and everybody says, oh, you know, Dortmund can finally win it, like when Bayern, they had Flick leaving, and even before then, manager leaving, and Dortmund doing really well with signings like Haaland and Sancho, everybody was saying, oh no, Bayern are going down. But then next season, Bayern come back even stronger, and they beat teams 5-1 on a daily basis in the Bundesliga. That's the sort of comparison that I found for them.
Well, I think that's really on point. You know, I've been watching this interview with Thomas Muller and I think Archie from ESPN. And he asked him about this rivalry between Bayern and Dortmund. And Thomas Muller went on talking about how, for him, they are his biggest rival, because obviously they were the most consistent this past decade. And then he said that he remembers very well what happened in 2011, 2012, where they won the two Bundesligas that year, or those 2 years. And he said that Bayern right after attacked them. And what he meant is that we went and signed Mario Götze, we went and signed, Hummels, and, you know, Lewandowski. And it's very interesting how he said it, because I don't think he meant to say attack them. But it's exactly what you said. You know, it's just that Bayern does not like to be messed with, and we will reply in an aggressive way. It's exactly what happened right now with Nagelsmann. It's a very, for me, aggressive way to deal with the issue. I think there were other ways to deal with it, but Bayern are like that. You know, if the hands hurt, then cut it and move on. And I think that we need, we need more teams like that. So right now in the Bundesliga, since Bayern is the only team that has that mentality, and I'm not sure Dortmund does, then I think Bayern will win the league. But if Dortmund really do, if Dortmund really changed, then this is the moment for them to prove that they can do it. I think that if they just manage to keep up and keep like 2 points difference, for me, it will be like a very impressive result from them. I think that it will be a good sign for whatever is coming in the up in next season and the ones after. I think it will send a good signal to certain players that they want to sign. And overall, when I see, as you said, Kamada, Ben Sebaini, these are not two players that you cannot, you know, resell. You know, there's no reselling value here. You're not going to make a lot of money out of them. But these are two players that are very good. will definitely improve the squad you have and will definitely help you compete for titles. And that's really something that I appreciate in their new approach, especially in the transfer market. So I think that they will not win the league this year, but if they manage to keep at least that 2 points difference, then I think it's a very good sign for next season, at least for them. And I think that they should be very excited about next season if that happens.
Thank you so much for being here with me and talking all things Bundesliga. I'd like to end with a personal question. And sure. I also asked Sam this one. What car do you drive and what would you dream to drive one day?
So, I don't drive still. Okay. Actually, I still do, carpooling, yeah, with a coworker. But the car I would like to drive, I think it's definitely a BMW. I don't know. I've always had a love for BMWs. Yeah, I think I'm not a big car guy. I'm more a motorcycle guy. And maybe that's also why I like BMWs. I think they're very good at both. And yeah, I think someday I will drive it.
Okay, so I think we can say that we have found the most German, or let's say the most Bavarian person in the world, Augustus, with his love of both Bayern München and BMW. Thank you so much for being here with me.
Thank you.
Please tell the good people who are listening to us where they can find you and your work.
Yeah, so you can always find me on Twitter. I'm very active there, maybe more active than in my social life. No, but you can always find me on Twitter. I talk a lot about Bayern. I try to talk about other leagues. I love to watch La Liga, Premier League, obviously, a little bit the Serie A, and Ligue 1. But yeah, I talk often about all the five leagues, mainly about Bayern. You can also find me on Get Football Plus. I make videos on previews on Bayern games and reaction to Bayern games for Get Football.
Don't forget to include your @, because I don't think you said that.
Yeah, so it's @their / Augustus. Or you can just write Augustus. I think you will find me as well. But yeah, thank you guys for the invitation. Been very, very fun to talk to you about Bayern. Great questions. Sorry if I took so long sometimes, but I really tried to give my best answers. And yeah, after a long day at work, it's been a bit hard at times to keep my train of thought. But I really tried to give my best. I hope it was great for you as well. And yeah, thank you for listening as well, for those who listen to this.
I think your answers have been really good. And I will let you get some rest now. Thank you so much. And bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to us. Hopefully we have decongested the current wildfire of the Premier League and Bundesliga. I have been your host, Edward. You can find my articles on Twitter and my videos on TikTok, both of them @HE_football.